All right. Well, welcome, everybody. This is Pat Williams. Welcome to our monthly forum call. I'm really excited about today, as apparently lots of you were. We had the most interest generated in the last several months, so lots of questions sent in for my guest, Bill O'Hanlon, who I've known for 20 years now, I think. And I actually knew of Bill back in my days when I was still a therapist. His books and his training with Milton Erickson and his influence and solution-oriented approaches were great for me as a therapist. And then we met in the early days when I was coaching and he was doing lots of training and speaking. So I'm happy to have Bill here today. Bill was trained as a psychotherapist originally, practiced for over 30 years, and now mostly writes books. In fact, he's written and published over 30 of them, so about a book for every year of therapy, even though they're not all about therapy, I know. He also does workshops all around the world, has given over 3,000 presentations in over 40 countries and in every state in the U.S. Lately, with the change of online courses and all the mixed media that are available, he has a fantastic bunch of courses on a variety of topics. Today, we chose to talk about one that I think a lot of people have a lot of interest on, and that's how to write a book in record time in the midst of your busy life for more clients, more income, and more impact. And apparently that title hit with a lot of people, Bill. So I can say that I recently signed up and have been doing your online course on book writing, and it is fantastic, packed with more information than one could think. The availability that you make of yourself on calls, on recordings, on videos, and PDF downloads and files is just a super valuable course. And I'm going to be going through it again because I've got a book ready for somebody to publish.
Cool.
Pretty much. So welcome to the call. Let's talk about getting books published and what you've learned. And
So ask me a question. What do you want?
Well, here's the first question. You've written a lot. So did you always know you were going to be a writer? Was that like a goal way back when?
I had no ambitions to be a writer. I love to read, but I had no ambitions to be a writer, and I had no idea I would be a writer. And I wasn't a natural writer, which is kind of makes me a better coach and teacher about this stuff. You know, years ago I was at this big mind-body conference, and Joan Borsenko, who's become a friend of mine since then, was standing up there, and she said, you know, she was doing a brown bag thing on how to get a book published. She said, well, I don't really know how to get a book published because I gave a lecture. An agent came up to me and said, that's a fantastic idea. You should write a book on it. I wrote the book. It became a bestseller. And I was like, okay, that wasn't my path, definitely. I really had to work at it. I wasn't a natural writer. I'm a kind of a professional procrastinator. I was a bit, when I wrote, my writing seemed kind of stale. So I wasn't a good writer. And also, I'm a little hyper. And sitting down to write was excruciating at first. And I really had to work to learn about how to write, how to organize myself to write, how to get myself to write, and how to get a book published, and then how to get it out to the readers. So it was like blood on the keyboards for the first bunch of books, and then I sort of locked in. I sort of figured out a system for how to get a book written really quickly. I had 4 kids at the time. I had a full-time practice. I was teaching workshops in addition, so I had to figure out how to write fast, how to write well, and how to get a book out, how to get a book finished, you know, which is always a challenge. Some people get ideas for books, but to sit down, finish the whole thing, and then get it published is a whole different thing. So, yeah, it's 36 books so far, and I'm on my 37th and 38th right now. I'm actually working on 2 books for some weird reason.
Well, and if any of you go to Bill's website, you'll see him standing there with this delightful picture, sitting there holding many of those books. I love that.
Yeah, that's a fun thing.
And I've read several of your books and also seen many of your talks, and here's an insight I got that you probably would agree to. A lot of your books come from the learnings you've had, the stories you tell, the workshops you do, and those ideas get generated into a book or vice versa. Is that correct?
That's right. It goes both ways, actually. For years, I spoke 3 or 4 times a month. And after I do the workshop, you know, literally 40 or 50 times, I would be so organized on the topic that the book would become easier to write. If I wrote a book that wasn't about something I'd been speaking about, it was a lot harder to write. So that's part of my system for, you know, the promise I made in this call is how to write a book in record time. What I discovered, and it's probably true for anything, I know, you know, I read your first book on coaching, and you had so much information to get organized as a coach. Before you actually went out and started doing a lot of coaching, it's the same way with books. If you think about things and pre-focus and pre-plan before you write, the book can be a lot faster. My first book took 3 years, partly because I was working it out while I was writing it. The next book, I had done a workshop on it for about 50 or 60 times. It took less than a year to write. And then when I learned that, after a while, hey, you know, if you really think about the book carefully and focus the book before you write it, the writing's a lot faster. I got the writing down to months, and now I can write a book in a couple of weeks, nonfiction book in a couple of weeks, because I know the strategies for focusing myself so much and outlining, you know, before I even think about it. You know, I have people come up to me occasionally when they meet me and say, oh, I've got a great idea for a book. You should write it and we'll share the royalties. I'm thinking, you know, ideas for books are easy. Making those ideas into a coherent book and writing it, obviously, and then selling it is a different thing. But the hardest work I find is the pre-thinking of the book. So when I go out and speak, and I do that a lot, the book becomes a lot easier. But there are other ways to do it besides speaking. Some people don't like to speak for a living, and they don't do that. So,
well, you're a great observer of human nature. I mean, I think you've learned that in what you've done with therapy and your work in Ericksonian. And I mean, I see you. You observe, and you kind of look, peek around the corner and see what people want to know. One of the things that people should know about your books and a lot of books today is they're not huge. They're not like big treatises or textbooks. They're readable.
My first book was over 300 pages. Hardly anybody read it. My next book was, you know, a little over 200 pages, a lot simpler, and a lot more people read it. So I think that's right. I'd rather make a book small. I've read books that seem fluffed up with, you know, they've just put in more to make it look like a book. And I'm like, get to the point, get through it. You know, get the information. People are busy these days, and you're competing with screens and, you know, many other things. And almost everybody I know is too busy. So the shorter you can make it, without making it too short, obviously.
Right.
It can't be an article, but, you know, make it as succinct as possible. I think that's good. And that's part of that pre-thinking and pre-focusing, which is what you're doing in the course right now. You're thinking about, okay, what are the essential ingredients that I need to put in this book? Who is it for? How am I going to get the, you know, what problem am I going to solve for them? So I have a process that I help people go through to focus the book before they do it so it doesn't sprawl around. I have written books in the past that sprawled around, and then I learned, okay, one major idea, and it has to have enough heft to it to make a book. Otherwise, it is an article or, you know, a book chapter or something like that.
Well, you've coached, you told me, over 150 books from others into publication. You assisted them with your coaching and your course. What's the biggest mistake others typically make about this whole writing and publishing idea?
Well, I think the biggest one is they don't pre-think, as I was saying. But the second biggest one is they have that Kevin Costner thing. If you build it, they will come. If you write the book, they will come. And I have people, sometimes people get into my course or into my coaching and they say, oh, I didn't know I would have to help sell the book. And I'm thinking, what? You just thought you'd put it out there and it would be an instant bestseller? No. You know, and again, that happens on occasion. Some books just go viral and catch fire. But most books, you need to make sure that before you write the book, you develop a marketing plan and an audience. Again, like your coaching stuff, because we all know that have put out coaching shingles, and they hardly have any clients. You also have to be a business person and a marketing person along with it. You don't have to spend your whole time doing that. I don't spend all my time doing marketing. I spend most of my time writing, but you have to at least think of the business and marketing side of things and get a little savvy about that. And it's easier these days than it was when I started because, you know, I can get on a call with you and I don't have to travel around the country doing a book tour. I can start a podcast or a blog or, you know, I can create an email list. There are lots of things you can do to get your work out without traveling around the world. So it's much easier than when I started.
Well, there's many choices people are going to ask, and I know you go over this in your course, and before the end of this call, we'll get the details on that course for people too. But in today's world, you talked about the technology, the social media, the different ways of getting out there. So even if a person finds a traditional publisher,
yep,
you're saying they still have to sell it. The publisher's not to sell it.
Yeah, what I hear these days when people kind of, oh, the book company won't do anything, so you should just self-publish. That's not really true. The book company does do something for you. They get your book in bookstores. They do help with the marketing, but they've got a lot of authors, and you're not the only one. And the you know, the Lord helps those who help themselves, and the book publishers help those who help themselves. So whether you self-publish or you go with a publisher, you should take some responsibility, all the responsibility, really, for getting the word of the book out. So, yeah, even with a traditional publisher, I'm always thinking about how can I help them get the word of the book out? How can I do marketing that will support what they're doing? And so, yeah, I think that's a that's another side. I mean, there are three hats you wear as an author. One is this kind of raw excitement and energy you have of the idea, and you just get that out on paper or on a computer as quickly as you can. And the second one is you put on your kind of editor's hat and you say, okay, what parts of that are too sprawling, don't work, and you, you know, where should I cut things? And, you know, Hemingway said, once you write something, you have to kill your babies, you know, and even great things that you've written because they don't fit in this project. So you have to be an editor. That's your second hat. And then the third hat is you have to be a marketer and business person and think about your book like a business because, you know, it's different for everybody, but I've made many hundreds of thousands of dollars from my books, but I've made way more than that from spin-offs of the books, speaking engagements, online courses, the one you're taking now, you know, just literally millions of dollars from that because of my books. So think about your books as, you know, a very expensive brochure in a certain way that brings people to your coaching practice, that will get people to buy your audios or videos or workbooks or speaking engagements. They'll get you. So it's worth putting in some time and effort to market the book and get it out there in a wider way.
Well, I would certainly agree that people that are going to want to write a book get a book writing course such as yours. And I also took another one at Hay House and frankly found yours 10 times as valuable.
Thank you. But
let's say that people have an idea for a book. One of the things you taught in the course, and I've learned in today's world, is you can start sending some of your writings to your network, like blogging or posting and getting feedback from people.
Absolutely.
Now, would you read more about this? Would is this something you'd pick up and read?
With social media, blogging, and things like that, you can involve people before the book comes out, which is really cool because it's like they ask the right questions. You know, oh, I never thought of that. And that's why speaking for so many years really helped me write books, because people would ask a question and I'd think, I've never thought about that, or I know the answer to that, but I never thought about putting that in the book. I'm going to put that in the book now. That was really good. Or they'll tell me a story, and I'll include that in the book. So it used to be that book publishers would freak out, oh, you can't put anything in the book out before the book. Now they're saying, yeah, give away a chapter, do a blog. There, you know, the famous story about Julie and Julia, this woman who was bored with her job and in New York City, and she started testing out Julia Child's recipes every night for a year, and she blogged about it. By the end of the year, she had 100,000 people reading her blog and a book contract. So, you know, the book company didn't care that she'd already had the blogs out. She revised them a little, obviously, what she wrote about. And the book company is like, great, as long as you've got a following, we will publish the book. It doesn't matter whether you put it out. And then you get comments back, as you say, corrections, ideas, interactions with people. You build an audience. So blogging your book is a terrific way to do it because it breaks it up into little pieces, as well as builds some of that marketing and audience and gets you a mechanism for feedback. Some people crowdsource their books these days. So you can get other people involved in your books definitely before the book is out.
How does one decide between, maybe I'm not asking this question right, but self-publishing and looking for a traditional publisher?
Now, there are pros and cons to both. The pro with self-publishing is it's fast. It's fast, and you have control. The con with is that you have control. So it's like what I used to say to people is that if you would be a good general contractor for getting your house remodeled, then you're a great candidate for self-publishing. Now, there are services that you can So you can do it for free, essentially, or for very little money. You know, someone wrote in a question before we started saying, you know, I have this book I want to write, but I have no money. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, why do you need money? You can publish a book for free these days. You can publish on Amazon, Kindle, desktop publishing, or CreateSpace. It will cost you nothing if you do it, you know, if you do all the work yourself, if you get the book cover, if you do all the editing. You know, it would cost you nothing to do that. Same thing if you go for a traditional publisher. It should cost you no money. If somebody asks for you for money from a traditional publisher, run the other way. Always in traditional publishing, money rolls downhill towards the author. If they ever ask you to push it uphill, they're rip-off artists. It's traditional publishing. Now, in self-publishing, sometimes there are packages people can buy that have editing and marketing and a book cover and indexing and things like that. So that's a little different. But if you don't want to go that way and you don't want to spend any money, you can put your book out with no money on those services these days. So, you know, I think if you want to do a lot more work, put in some sweat equity, and you have friends that will help you edit, you know, for no money, probably self-publishing is the fastest and easiest way to do it. I mostly publish and have published with traditional publishers for several other reasons. One is I think they do help me with marketing. There's more prestige with it when I say my books are published by HarperCollins and W.W. Norton and Pearson and, you know, all these well-known people say, oh, you're a real author when I tell them that. And I think, well, I guess you're a real author if you self-publish too. And I've also self-published. But typically with a publisher, they'll give you money. And that, you know, when we were talking about how do you get yourself to write. One of the things is I signed a contract. I promised the book would be there in September, and you've done that. And it's you know, it's like what they say about facing your execution. It focuses your upcoming execution. It focuses the mind. So when when you've signed a contract and you say you'll deliver it by this time and they've given you money, you take it more seriously than if you say, I should get this book out this year. So self-publishing, you have to be a lot more self-motivated. Other publishing, less motivated because there's an external motivation. So I typically like having publishers. You make a little more money self-publishing per book, but I usually make more money when I go with a publisher. So it's, you know, six to one dozen other these days.
So let's back up on that question a bit. Before the contract, people need to have a book proposal and, you know, sample chapters and things like that. Say a little bit about that. I mean, I know you go into detail about that in the course, and that's key, but you don't just send an idea to a publisher. You send a proposal.
Right. Now, it used to be a little more informal. You could just send a one-page, you know, cover letter and say, hey, I got this idea for a book. These days, almost everybody needs a proposal, and there's a certain format to the proposal that is just professional and looks right and covers all the territory. But it used to drive me crazy to write a proposal because I think, I could be spending this time writing my book. Why am I doing this? But as I said at the beginning of the call, it helps me. Now, I love proposals now. It helps me, and I have a template that, you know, you can just fill in the blanks, so that makes it easier. But it helps me pre-think the book and the marketing plan and what the book is all about, who the book is for, how I'm going to get it written, when I'm going to get it written, you know, how I'm going to build my audience, all that stuff, before I write the book. And that helps me write the book. So writing, I even recommend these days, but if you're going to self-publish, you should go through the trouble of preparing a proposal, almost as if you're going to submit to yourself as the publisher, because it will help you think so clearly about the book. So a proposal is sort of a business plan for the book, an outline for the book, sample chapters, as you say, and if you haven't published before, it's two or three sample chapters typically, or parts of chapters, and it will show the publisher, and again, if you're self-publishing, it'll just help you organize yourself and think very clearly about the book. But if you're going to submit to an agent or a publisher, you definitely need a proposal, and there are two things you really need. A proposal, a really good idea for a book, maybe I'll say three things because that's just a given. And the third thing is you need what they call a platform. And a platform is how are you going to get the word of the book out? And so, you know, for you, you have this, you know, you have the ILCT. You mm-hmm. have a network mm-hmm. of people that if your book comes out, you can say, hey, everybody, I got a new book out. You can mention it on one of these calls. You can send out emails.
Right.
You can put it on the, you know, on the social media sites, things like that. And you know you'll get to thousands of people that way. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you're speaking, you can get to people that way. So that is the, you know, the thing that probably separates most people from either self-publishing or going for a traditional publisher. How big a platform do you have? The bigger platform you have, the more likely that a publisher or an agent is going to want to want your book. So I would spend some time while I'm writing the book working on making sure I got a platform.
Yeah, I heard that at the Hay House workshop I went to, and also in your writing, building your platform. And
yep.
even though they say a lot of editors won't even touch you if you can't reach 20 to 30, 40,000 people, they do say, however, if you've got a good idea
yep.
and you send a proposal in, an editor may say, oh, this is new and different. This is something different.
Right.
So I don't want people to get negative
yeah.
about it. If you've got a book in you, this is for everybody listening and
yep.
also later in the recording, start writing it. Follow these guidelines that Bill has in his course. And, you know, I've got 9 chapters written because I told myself I was going to do this course and started writing. And, yeah, they're all going to change, but it's a lot more than just the idea now.
Yeah, I think that's right. Sometimes the idea in itself is part of your platform because, like, wow, I've never seen that idea. And that, again, is part of what you need to pre-think before you write the book, because I think
right.
the worry that I often have when I coach people is I used to come up with a book idea, and I would go to my agent and the publisher, and I would hear this, which I dreaded hearing, is, we've already seen this book, Bill. It's been written
right.
before. And I would say, no, it actually hasn't. I know it hasn't. Then I realized, oh, it's my job to show them that I've got a unique idea. So if you have an
mm-hmm.
idea and you can slant it in a unique way, then, or for a unique population, you know, you'll do coaching for the newly divorced. Now, who else is doing that? How about coaching for people who have just lost a pet? That would
mm-hmm.
be a, you know, a kind of a unique niche. So if you have a unique enough idea, that's part of your platform, is how unique is your idea. Part of your platform is how many people you can get it to. And here's the thing. I'm going to tell you an inspirational story because I agree with you, Pat. Some people think, oh, I don't want to do marketing, or I'm not good at marketing, or I have no following, or I'm a nobody. And I think that's the wrong way to think. So let me tell you an inspirational story. I was
okay.
talking about this one time to somebody who was coming to me for coaching on how to write a book, and I was doing a workshop on it, and he said, well, now I just want to give up because you have a great platform, Bill. You have all these books, you have all these people on social media, you have all these people on your email list, you speak regularly, and I have platform envy. I don't have a platform. So I said, look, you're thinking about it wrong. Like you said, don't think about it that way. Think about, how can I get the word of this book out? Now, this guy, amazing guy, he was a social worker turned flight attendant. That is, he was a flight attendant who went back to school and got a degree in social work because he was just interested in people, and he wanted. And so he had a part-time practice, social work. He had a part-time, you know, gig as a flight attendant. And he'd been a flight attendant for 2 different airlines. JetBlue and, I don't know, US Air, I think. And so he goes to all these people that he knows because he's had these things, the Flight Attendants Association, the Pilots Association, JetBlue newsletter, and he knows all these people. He's a very gregarious guy, like you are. You know, he gets to know
mm-hmm.
everybody. And it turns out he can get the word of the book out to 400,000 people. Because there's an airline analyst who said he put it in his newsletter because it's sort of related to the travel industry. It's about traveling around and learning stuff from different cultures to make your life better and happier. So so then he gets even more creative, and he goes back. He's been to 3 different universities. He went to the American University in Beirut when he was younger. He went to the University of Chicago and 1 other university. He writes the Alumni Association and say, how many people do you have in your Alumni Association that your newsletter goes out to or your magazine goes out to, Alumni Magazine? And it turns out it's 900,000 between these 3 universities. So he comes back and he says, I don't have platform envy anymore. I can get word of the book out to about 1,300,000 people when it comes out.
Wow.
And he's on his second book now. He's on his second book now, and his first book went into the second printing. And, you know, it's called Life Could Be Sweeter, his first book. His name is Sununu, Bill Sununu. And so you get creative on where are your networks? It's like Kevin Bacon, you know, the 3 degrees of separation.
Right.
Who do you know that knows somebody who could get the word of the book out? And I never thought of my alumni association. I went back to my alumni association. I just went to one university. I was thinking, oh, why didn't I go to 3 universities like he did? and I could come up with 360,000 people that, and they have announcements in my alumni newsletter saying, have you written a book? Would you like us to put it in our newsletter? And yes. And they like you to do a little donation. So I do a $25 donation, and they put, you know, my books, every book that comes out in there now, and it goes to 360,000 people. Great.
That's a great story. So I'm thinking the people on this call and the people listening, most of them are going to be our ILPT students or people wanting to write a book about self-help, I'm guessing, right?
Yeah.
I don't think we have novelists on the call, but I could be wrong.
And that's a whole different pathway. I'm glad you made that. You can use a lot of these ideas, but it's a whole different – nonfiction, way easier to get published, I think.
Yes. So self-help, or as I jokingly used to call it, shelf help, it's not really about shelves so much anymore because you're not getting the people who live with men who hate dogs and the women who love them, all those things anymore.
Yeah.
But you do have the 7 strategies for success or the top 10 reasons for, I mean, you know, and you go into that in the course. So many ideas for self-help. What I hear you saying, and you can expand on this, is there still a way to do a micro niche or a special audience or make it different from your perspective as the writer?
That's part of the thing. Well, here's another pep talk. You know, people say, oh, there's so many books out there. How could mine possibly stand out? Look, every year a bunch more diet books come out, a bunch more relationship books come out. A bunch more money management books come out. Why? Because they're always looking for a new slant. And, you know, I remember seeing a book on the shelf a while ago, and it was called Die Poor. You know, all these other books are about die rich and, you know, and save a lot of money. Die Poor. This person said, you should plan your retirement so you spend all your money before you die, you know. And I was like, that's a different slant. I'd never thought of that. And I thought, that is a great idea. It got me to notice the book. So you have to make sure you come up with some different slant that gets your book noticed if you're writing about a typical subject, like coaching or anything like that.
It bothered me, though, Bill, when my dad bought that book, you know, How to Die Poor.
He wanted to encourage you to work for yourself and not to expect anything from him. That's the idea. Yeah, don't give your kids money. It's like Warren Buffett. Don't give your kids money. It demotivates them. Although he gives them $100,000 every Christmas, and I'm thinking, doesn't that demotivate them a little?
Well, so speaking of money, let's talk about – if people have to get an agent, does that cost? How do royalties work? Some of that nitty-gritty.
Yeah,
and then we'll talk about what...
It's good to know. Again, if you self-publish, you can keep more of the book proceeds. So typically with Amazon, you keep 70%. With iBooks, you keep 70% of the selling price. And so, you know, it just depends on the, you know, for an e-book, that's that kind of stuff. For a traditional book, you shouldn't have to pay your agent anything up front, but agents are really smart, and they know authors are almost always desperate for money. So they, when you sign a contract, you have an agent, and an agent sells it to a book publisher, let's say HarperCollins or somebody like that. Typically, the percentage is 15% that they will take out for representing you, and they're worth their weight in gold, I can tell you. You should never resent that. They'll sell more overseas rights, and so you'll make more money that way. They'll sell more reprint rights. They'll negotiate a better contract, get more money up front for you. They'll get more money in the end because they'll argue with some parts of the contract, things like that. But ultimately, let's say for a $20 book, there's a formula. There's generally a formula. You get 10% of the first 5,000 books that are sold. So, you know, you get $2 per book. But your agent gets that money first and takes 15% out of it and sends the rest on to you. So they don't cost money up front, but they take money out when you make money. Same thing with your advances. If you get an advance for the book, let's say you get $10,000 advance. That's very low, but let's just use that for an example. $10,000 advance. Then they would take out their 15% and send you the rest. And usually that advance comes in two or three segments. So once when you sign the contract, once when you deliver the manuscript, and once when the book is out, or in two. Once when you sign the contract, and once when the book is accepted by the publisher. So it just, it's different for different publishers. So you shouldn't be sending any money to an agent. Those agents charge reading fees. Those are generally rip-off people. The agent represents you, gets the best money for you. If you go through an agent, if you go unagented, like your first book was with Norton Professional Books, you don't need an agent for them. They're a smaller press. They're not exactly HarperCollins, and it's not going out to everybody. You don't need an agent, so you get all of that money. You get some up front, and then you have to pay back your advance, and then you just get 10% for the first 5,000, 12.5% for the next 5,000, and then after that, 15%. That's pretty boilerplate, typical amount that you make. Now, again, self-publishing is a totally different thing. You shouldn't have to pay too much to self-publish. Maybe, you know, a package might be $2,000 at the very high end. I've heard people paying $5,000 for a self-publishing bag and everything. Who are you going to? What are they? You can get a self-published book for free. Why are you paying all that money? And they get all these promises that they'll put it on the bestseller list and they'll set up your blog and your website. And I don't know. I'm very skeptical about those kind of things. And I'm totally skeptical about an agent who charges any money up front. Agents collect money on your behalf and then send it on to you.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about your course, because I invited you on this call because I think this is going to be a valuable service for many of our students who are already graduate degree professionals in other fields. They're getting into coaching. I know they have good things to say.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about your course. When are you going to do it again? How much it costs? All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, we've actually had terrible timing with this because I'm just finishing up. You're in the current version of the course, and I do it once a year. And here's I'll just reassure people. You can go to getyourbookwritten.com and you can download a free report to kind of get you jump started. And then I'll give you some tips by email over the next few months that'll really help you get motivated and get going in writing your book. I will offer another course next year, early next year, and so you'll have a little time to get ready. The course, the price is probably going to be $900 for a 3-month course. And here's the thing: I rarely do individual coaching anymore, but when I do, I'm $600 an hour. I hope that doesn't shock anybody, but I don't want to do it anymore because I used to be crazy busy and I'm a reformed busyholic, so I'm not going to do that anymore. And so I've channeled all my interests, because I still love to coach people, into 2 or 3 courses a year, and I'm doing one on hypnosis is coming up next month, but it takes hours a day to coach people on the web. I give them feedback, personalized feedback on their projects, and then through a series of phone calls that I do where we get to talk, chat live. And so the next one's coming up early next year, so you know people will have to wait. But if they get on the list at www.getyourbookwritten.com, they will be on the list for notification of future courses. So I do that once a year, and it's a terrific group of people. I mean, they're highly supportive of one another, and sometimes they get together as accountability partners. Hey, you know, I'll write a chapter this week and show it to you, I'll promise, and then we'll talk on the phone about what issues I'm having and how to stay motivated and things like that. And, you know, someone sent ahead a question saying, "How, you know, if you get an idea, how do you stay motivated? How do you stay motivated?" And I think part of it is you get a coach. You know, that should be a no-brainer for people on this call. You get a coach who knows what they're doing, or else a general coach who just keeps you on track with any of your projects. And you get accountability partners. You know, that's what I said earlier, is that if I sign a contract and they pay me money, I'm highly motivated to deliver that book, but most people don't have that motivation, so you need to generate your own internally, or you need to find your external motivations. Accountability partners and coaches are terrific for writing your books.
Yeah, I'll tell you, with the one course I took, and not so much with your people on the course, but I've got two mastermind groups of people supporting each other in writing. What I would urge people that just heard your comment about the course next year, is go ahead and start writing now. Start writing your information. Figure out what your topic is. You may have a couple of chapters or more written by the time the course comes around. And what Bill's course does is fill in all the details. I mean, it's, I don't know how many hours, but between 5 to 8 minute videos, 8 different modules, downloads, private or group coaching that he does. It is a super valuable course. It will help you,
finish the recipe. You've written books before, but you knew, I'm going bigger now. I want to make a bigger splash and a bigger impact. So I'm really going to work to focus this book, get it the best it can be, get the most advanced I can be, and get it out to people in an effective way. So some people may have already written books, but they haven't succeeded to the level that they want. You know, you can do it if you have the right book and the right approach.
Yeah, I mean, my books with Norton were more of the professional coaching books. And I got lucky. They saw my outline for ILCT, and she said, "We think you have a book." And all I did was send the outline, and that was the proposal.
Yeah.
But those are textbooky sorts of books, and they're good. I mean, I've sold a lot of books. It's gotten me a lot of speaking. But I want to write a book for the wider public, you know, and have it be a wider spread.
Yeah, and that's a whole different thing. And why you want to go for an advance, you're probably going to go for a bigger advance, and the advances are, you know, 10,000 at the lowest to 300,000 up front for these kind of books. Because they know they will sell more, or the potential is there for them to sell more. And the reason you want to go for a bigger advance is, you know, money is nice, but that means they're voting, saying, we like this book, we're going to get behind it, and we're going to get it out there. So you're going bigger now, and you want to get it out to the biggest group you can get. So you want to go for a bigger publisher, one that will give you more money and put more money behind the marketing.
Well, all the people on this call, you know, if they're coaching and they've got coaching clients, I know they recommend books to their clients. My wife used to laugh because the Amazon guy, UPS guy would show up there every day with another book somebody told me I'd get. It's like, holy crap, you know.
Yeah.
But I gotta find out what's current, and then I recommend it to clients. I read things. It becomes part of my speaking. Here's what I think we should try to do in the time left. Amy, if you're still on the call, let's see if we don't have a super noisy background, if we can take two or three live questions from people that have hung around and listened to Bill and I talk.
I'd love it.
If you can unmute the lines, and we can have somebody who's...
Dave.
Don't flush the toilet on us now.
Okay, great.
Who's got a question live? All right, who is that? Who said I have a question? Who has that question? I can't hear.
There is a lot of light. You're all unmuted if you have a question for Bill about writing a book.
Hi, I have a question.
All right, say your name.
This is Irene.
Hi, Irene.
Hi. I just wondered what would be kind of a reasonable time frame that we might expect to be able to write a 150 to 200 page book. How many months or years or whatever?
Probably should be closer to 200. That's what they're looking for, a little more usually. They call it 50 to 60,000 words is kind of a low end, and that's the way I usually write my books, as Pat said. That really depends on how disciplined you are and how fast a writer you are, and also how much you pre-thought the book. It took me 3 years to write my first book, and about a year for each book after that for about 10 more books. Now and then it started to take me 3 months because I did a lot of that pre-planning, and I got faster at writing and smoother at writing, easier at writing. In my course, I have 12 rapid writing methods that I give people, and that can increase your speed, but reasonably probably for most people it's about a year part-time writing, and if you do it regularly, you could do it more quickly than that. If you wrote 1,000 words a day for 60 days, you could have a book done. But most people aren't so disciplined or won't stay on that. So let's say you write 3 times a week and you learn to write 1,000 words a day, which for me would take me about a half an hour. For other people, it would probably take them an hour or two. And you'd get it done in 5 months, a book like that, a 50,000, 60,000 word book. So
an hour or two to write 1,000 words?
Yeah, for most people. Because
if it's a well-thought-out topic.
If it's a well-thought-out topic and it's well-outlined and you have some practice writing, you can write I can write 1,000 words in very short time, 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah, I have some experience. I've been a co-author on a published book already.
So you could do it more quickly. If you could do 1,000 words a day and you just didn't take a day off, you just got up earlier or scheduled in an appointment with yourself like you would with somebody else, and you say, I'm going to take an hour each day before, you know, unless some people meditate or exercise regularly, and like that. If you really committed to it, you get your book done in 2 months.
Yeah, but then that's a draft, right? So then you have editing.
Yeah.
How much time do you usually take? Does it usually take, you think, for editing?
Well, I usually have other people edit my books and then send them back to me. And so for my first books, I burned out my friends because after about 15 books, they're like, I'm not going to read another one of your books and give you editing. But I just chose my most literate friends and I sent them chapters at a time and say, hey, will you look at this? Tear it apart. I really want you to tear it apart. And I would get it back and then I would revise. Depends on how extensive the changes are, but it would take me 15, 20 minutes to fix a chapter.
You just did that as you went along.
I did that as I went along, yeah. And then, of course, once you get a publisher, if you get a publisher, they will rip it apart another time. I thought, I've had 10 friends read it. There's not an error in here. I got it back from my editor at my publishing house, and it was red pencil all over the place, and a much better book because of that. So ultimately, I spend more time editing, but not that much more. It's faster to edit than it is to write, for most people.
So you're saying 200 pages would be a minimum?
I'd say it depends on the kind of book. If it's self-published, you can go a little smaller, but, if it's an e-book, you can go a little smaller. But a regular book with a publisher, they're looking for at least 200 pages. And, you don't want to stretch it out or fluff it out, but they don't want – I had a book that my agent couldn't sell because it was 60 pages. It was just 60 pages. I don't even know how many words that was, but it was 60 pages. She said, it's too small. I can't sell it, Bill. So I self-published it. It was my third self-published book, and I give it away now. It's called The Lazy Man's Guide to Success. If you sign up at BillOhanlon.com for my newsletter, you get that free book, and it's a terrific book. I loved it. She loved it. She just said, I can't sell it. Small.
Thanks for your question. Anybody else?
Yes, this is Elena.
Oh, boy, three people at once. Let's...
All right, Elena?
Sure. So this is Selena.
Selena, sorry.
Hi. Thanks so much. This is very helpful. And I wanted to ask, do you do your research in the pre-planning stage, or do you do it during writing?
Both. Be careful of getting bogged down in research. Someone pre-wrote a question saying, how many references are needed to write a book that will be about 100 pages? And I was like, references? That's the last thing I think about, unless you're doing a research book. If you're doing a book that you're just trying to give people information, you should put in some references. But I do research a little, and then I write the book and see, there's a hole here. I'm just going to keep writing, and I'll go back and get that. Unless it's really crucial concept that I can't put in the book without research, then I'll stop and do the research. But anything that slows me down from the writing or distracts me from the writing is going to make the book way harder to finish. And you may get so bogged down, which some people do in the research, they just stop. And so my key thing, and I stress this in my course, is momentum. Keep the momentum going, because some people get an initial spark for a book, and then they start and they stop, and it sits on their computer or in their drawer, or they write the whole book, but they can't get it published. Anything that keeps your momentum going is good. Anything that stops it is not good. So I wouldn't stop unless you absolutely had to, but I would do some pre-research, the basics that I needed to know to start the book.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Bill wrote a book called Do One Thing Different, which is the book that got him on Oprah. And that book is just about momentum, really. Do one thing different, make the change, keep making the change. It applies to this
small
theory of getting...
Small steps, baby steps, Bob. Okay, there were a couple other people that had questions.
Yes, this is Anne. I was one of those three. I just wrote a book, my first book, in 40 days. I set a deadline. I'm going to write a book in 40 days. And on day 40, I finished the book, and I'm really excited about moving forward. The dilemma that I'm having is overthinking the editing process, wanting it to know that you can't change it after it's published, and I'm sort of stuck there. Any suggestions?
So you're going to self-publish, or you're looking for a publisher?
I haven't gone down that road. I've listened to your options today, and I'm going to make a decision this week.
Well,
the question is, how do you not over-edit each chapter?
You give it to somebody else. I think, you know, you can get so into that squirrel cage in your mind that you don't have a good perspective on it. So I usually go external at that point, and then it's out of my life, it's out of my mind for a week or a month or however long it takes somebody else, and I usually ask two or three people to do it at the same time, and I give them chunks so I don't overwhelm them. But, you know, then you get some feedback, and it's like, oh, I couldn't even see. This chapter is really good. They generally like it. There's a few tweaks that I need to make. This chapter does not make sense to them. Ah, I'm too close to it. I didn't get that. Now I see what's wrong with it. And so stop going around in your head and go externally.
Well, fortunately for me, I haven't overused all my friends yet the first book, so I should be able to get lots to edit.
That's good for you. And, you know, I chose my most literate friends, the people who like to read a lot, the people who would correct my grammar when we're together, that kind of stuff. You know, it's like they can annoy you, and now they can be an asset for you. It's really good.
Okay. I'm going to email out to six friends today.
I love it. Yeah, and do it a little at a time so you don't overwhelm them. And give them a deadline. You know, it's like anything. If you just say, I'd like this back, you know, as soon as possible, that is not helpful. I need it back by, you know, 2 weeks from today. That's really helpful.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Great question. Thanks. And there was one other person who had a question.
Yep.
Summer. Hi, my name is Bonnie.
Okay,
Bonnie.
We had Summer and we had Bonnie, I think.
Okay, so you tell us if we have enough time, Pat.
Yeah, we'll do these two more and then we'll wrap up. So I think I heard Summer first.
This is Sama. My question is, is it possible for me to write a book even though English is my second language?
Yeah, I have a lot of people in the course that are writing it. Now, you have to figure out what language you want to write it in. Again, this is what editors are for. I can tell you, some people in my course have dyslexia. They do not speak grammatically. They do not write grammatically. But that's what they invented editors for. Your task is to get your raw ideas down there. Don't worry so much about you getting them perfect, and then have other people edit it. So obviously, if you're going to publish in English, you have English readers read it and correct whatever might not be right.
Perfect. Okay.
Great.
But
great.
Is there any other, let's say, advice for mother tongue English speakers?
Yes.
Like, what should I do other than find editors to do my editing?
Well, you might write it in your original language first and then translate it yourself because you're more flowing in your original language, but that's a lot more work. I would say it's the same advice I gave several times through the call is pre-think what the book is about. Outline it really in detail, and then it'll be easier. The language barrier and the vocabulary issues won't be such an issue. You'll have the main ideas, and that's the main point.
Great.
And one last question. Now, I want a bigger target in the U.S. because, let's say, if I put it in my country, it's not going to be as much as reader as there. That's one thing. That's why it's going to be in English, and I will mix and match the cultural, you know, benefits from both, you know, the West and the East.
Then you need to get a following in the United States and other English-speaking countries, and that's a blog or podcast or YouTube channel or social media sites. You make sure you have some followers that are English readers. That's your task in addition to writing the book.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your question. And Bonnie,
Bonnie
gets the last
question. Thank you. I'm one of those people who has a manuscript sitting in their drawer, and they haven't done much with it. I'm interested in writing for middle grade readers. And my question is, how do you know that the topic that you're choosing for that age group is specific to that age group, or even appropriate for that age group? And also my concern is my writing level itself, whether or not I could get it down to that age group, or if I'm writing too much down to them, or if I should be writing more, you know what I'm saying, the level of my writing.
I do. So if you get an agent, they will know what publishers are going to specialize in those books. So if you're going that direction, you don't have to decide about the publisher. If you're not going that direction, you should get a book by Jeff Herman. It's called the 2015 Guide to Editors, Publishers, and Agents, I think it's called. And that will have a list of a bunch of publishers, and you look in there, ones that publish for that age group. But there are, built into Word, like Microsoft Word, there are tools, or you can search on the web for tools to find out what vocabulary age group you're writing for. You can analyze your manuscript, and it'll tell you these words are not used by third graders. They just won't understand them. There are tools to analyze that. But mainly, like I was saying to a few other people, get people in that age group to read it, and they will tell you, what does this mean? You know, just give them samples, and they'll say, I don't get this part. And then, you know, you should go to your audience and ask your audience what they like about it, what they don't like about it, what they understand, what they don't understand. That's better than any vocabulary program or even agent or publisher. You go to your customers and get in conversation with them.
Okay, and that would be, I guess, if I went to my friends and I spoke with some of their kids or their grandkids, and,
go to
you
a
know,
teacher.
My concern
go
also
to a
was
teacher.
The topic. Go to an agent.
A teacher.
Go to a teacher. And get, you know, who has that age group and say, would you, you know, show this to your kids or read them a sample of the chapter as in one of your task assignments, you know, or one of your class activities.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a very good idea. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Bonnie and everybody else, thank you. We're going to wrap up.
And
Bill, I just have to thank you immensely. This is a valuable use of your time for our students and adult learners.
I love it.
So,
you and I have had such a long relationship. We like each other so well. This went so smoothly. It was just like falling off a log, Pat, talking to you.
I do miss coming to Santa Fe, but I can tell that.
If you're living in Florida now, you're living in Florida.
Yeah, well, I am. I'm very happy with my life. So let's find out how people find you. What's the best resource for them to go to and sign up for?
Really, that getyourbookwritten.com, that'll get you on a mailing list. It'll get you a free report and some follow-up help with no charge or anything like that. And you can always go to my general site, which is just billohanlon.com. You can see that cool picture that Pat likes so much. It's billohanlon.com. And if you sign up for my general newsletter, you'll get a copy of that little book that my agent said she couldn't represent. It's a Lazy Man's Guide to Success, and it's a quick read. You can read it in an hour or two, and it's a terrific book, I think. So it's one of my favorites.
And you're anything but lazy between the music and the book writing and speaking. You don't sleep.
I am actually lazy at core, and I work almost none. I looked at my calendar this week, and I have nothing on the calendar until I go to a conference on Friday, and I do a book signing on Friday, except you. You're the only thing on my calendar.
I am so proud of you, because I say I'm not retired. I'm just partly working now. So
there you go. That's it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, thanks so much, everybody. Thank you for coming on the call and those who listen.
Thank you, Will.
And please take consideration for that course. You won't be sorry. All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.